If you would be opening back up to Proverbs chapter 6. What do you hate? I hate when my computer freezes and it's been a while since I saved last. And there's no autosave. I hate when I have to jump through way too many hoops to unsubscribe or cancel a service. Sometimes even talking to a person on the phone who's paid to try to talk me out of it. I hate when I walk through a spider web, and as I'm trying to clean it off, I walk through another spider web. I've only experienced that here. I hate public school homework. I graduated high school back in 95, but it still bothers me. I say, I'm a kid, all right, and I just went to school for 7 hours, and you want me to come home and get back to schoolwork? Well, and I've got a few more. Okay, we've been looking at this passage in Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. And it talks about these things that God hates. Now, those things that I listed, they're not a big deal. But these things are. And obviously, if somebody claims that they love the Lord, then they're going to seek to do the things that please Him and to avoid the things that do not, especially those things which He hates. Now, so far, we've looked at haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, and feet that run rapidly to evil. So today we're going to look at the last two. And the next one is a false witness who utters lies. Do you solemnly swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Please state your name for the record. You see, there are some people. Well, they would lie to their family, their friends and neighbors. They'd even lie to their boss or to their teacher. But they wouldn't lie under oath. And I think a lying tongue, okay, that was the one that was mentioned earlier. I think that's referring to lying in a more private setting, usually about yourself. Whereas here, see, this is lying in more of a public setting, usually about someone else. Now, interestingly, forms of lying account for 28.5% of this list. It's a 2 out of 7. It's obviously a big deal to God. Now, in the Ten Commandments, okay, you remember Exodus 20 and verse 16. It says, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And this is specifically referring to false accusations because before fingerprinting and DNA samples and Lumalite and the other CSI technology, well, the main evidence for a crime, it had to be provided by witnesses. And so if the witnesses are not truthful, then injustice it can result. Now, Proverbs 14:25, it says, a truthful witness saves lives, but he who spreads lies is treacherous. And 25:18, like a club and a sword and a sharp arrow is a man who bears false witness against his neighbor. Now, in the Old Testament, is it the Old Testament Jewish law, if you were found to be a false witness, you were in big trouble. Deuteronomy 19, it says, the judges shall investigate thoroughly. And if the witness is a false witness, and he has accused his brother falsely, you know, speaking of his fellow Jew, then you shall do to him just as he had intended to do to his brother. Thus you shall purge the evil from among you, and the rest will hear and be afraid, and will never again do such an evil thing among you. In other words, okay, you would get the penalty that person you testified against would have gotten if the false testimony had been believed. See, you falsely accused them of murder, and so you get the penalty for murder. That's quite a deterrent. See, in this country, perjury is often just punished by a fine or a bit of jail time. And I recently read an article titled, Why is Perjury So Rarely Prosecuted? Now, it's also interesting in the Jewish law that they would even be in trouble if they refused to give testimony. Leviticus 5:1. If a person sins because he does not speak up when he hears a public charge to testify regarding something he has seen or learned about, he will be held responsible. And so sometimes, is it refusing to speak up can cause the court to not reach a fair verdict. In the Bible, we can see that David, okay, he faced false witnesses. Psalm 27, he prayed, "Do not deliver me over to the desire of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and such as breathe out violence. I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord." Well, as you know, they tried to use false witnesses with Jesus. Matthew 26, verse 59. Now the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Jesus in order that they might put him to death. And they did not find any, even though many false witnesses came forward. Now, Mark tells us it didn't work because their testimony, it wasn't consistent. But as it's been said, liars are never in short supply. And we find it again with Stephen, Acts 6. Then they secretly induced men to say, "We have heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and against God." And they stirred up the people, the elders and the scribes, and they came up to him and dragged him away and brought him before the council. They put forward false witnesses who said, "This man incessantly speaks against this holy place and the law." But of course, there are other ways of ruining people with false words other than perjury, you know, courtroom lying. Because there's gossip and slander. Now, gossip is usually defined as telling the truth in bad ways or spreading rumors that, well, they may or may not be true. But slander has a much sharper edge. See, slander is telling lies in order to destroy someone's reputation. Like when they would say that Jesus was a glutton and a drunkard in Matthew 11, 19. And so I think that slandering a person's name under any circumstances would probably fit this prohibition. I've read that in some cultures, to stand by and do nothing while someone is being slandered, and you know it, that's morally equivalent to standing by and doing nothing while someone is being physically assaulted. You see, how many careers and marriages and reputations and so forth have been destroyed because of gossip and slander? So how many people's lives have been ruined because of a lie or even a half-truth that's coming from a neighbor, a coworker, a fellow student, a political opponent, business competition, or what have you? If you have been the victim of someone lying about you in some way, you know that the child's rhyme, you know, "sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me," is complete rubbish. You may have heard the story about the woman who started a rumor about a preacher in a small town. And it got so bad, the rumor that she started, it's so widespread that the preacher had to move. And on his way out of town, he stopped by this lady's house with a feather pillow. And when she opened the door, he asked for a sharp knife. And of course, reluctantly, she brought him one. He then slashed the pillow, and the wind just took the feathers, and they flew everywhere. They just seemed to go for miles. And he said, "I want you to go and pick up all of the feathers, every single one of them, and put them back in this pillow." And she replied, "Well, that's impossible." And he said, "Exactly. And that is what you have done to my reputation." Ephesians 4:31, it says, "Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice." 1 Peter 2:1, it says, "Therefore, putting aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisy and envy and all slander." As it's been said, we hold the reputation of others in our hands. I said, never forget how much influence you have concerning how others are thought of. And again, the Bible is very clear that lying in general is a sin. Proverbs 6:12, it says, "A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a false mouth." And 12:22, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord." Christians are told, therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you with his neighbor, Ephesians 4:25. And do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, Colossians 3:9. And yes, we can come up with some very interesting hypothetical situations. But generally speaking, lying puts someone in league with Satan, since he is the father of lies. John 8:44, Jesus told some Jews, you are of your father the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. You see, Satan's lies and his manipulation in the garden ended up causing the death of every human from that day forward, Genesis 3. Okay, back to perjury. Now, how many times in trials have we seen witnesses shown to be false, either telling lies to help or harm the person being tried, which makes you wonder how many people have gotten away with it? Stephen Duke, professor at Yale Law School, is talking about this, and he said, perjury is commonplace in America. I don't know if that was as true a century ago as it is now. I imagine that a century ago, more people believed that God punished perjury than now, when it appears that almost no one believes that. False witnesses and dishonest lawyers and experts who commit perjury and so forth, this makes the headlines way more than they should. And again, you may get away with it here, but that doesn't actually mean that you got away with it. Proverbs 19:5, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will not escape. So what causes someone to do this? I mean, what causes someone to be a false witness and either lie or deliberately spin the truth about another person, either in a court or somewhere else? Well, some do it out of malice. See, they want to hurt the person out of revenge or something like that. Some do it out of carelessness. They simply repeat a lie without first checking it out to see if it's true. Some do it out of fear. You know, maybe they've been threatened with some repercussions if they don't. Or maybe they're the one who's actually guilty and they just want to pin it on someone else. Some do it for their own profit. I mean, maybe this person is their business competition, or their competition for the guy or the girl they like, or their competition for the reward. But as you can see, none of these are good reasons. We should always strive to be like Jesus, who is described as the faithful and true witness, Revelation 3:14. So before we say something about someone else, we need to ask ourselves, is this true? Is this accurate? Be very careful with the reputation of others, so we hold it in our hands. Benjamin Franklin is often credited with saying, glass, china, and reputation are easily cracked and never well mended. Okay, next and last, one who spreads strife among brothers. Or it could be translated, sows strife, as in farming, you know, sowing seeds of strife and discord. Well, brothers, that's a term that can be applied to fellow countrymen, to physical brothers, to spiritual brothers, or to those who are as close as brothers. And spreading strife, that of course can be done in our own relationships or in the relationships of others. Proverbs 26:21, it says, like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Now, contentious, it means confrontational and argumentative. And someone like that's always going to cause problems. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, and that's P-E-A-C-E and not P-I-E-C-E. You know, Matthew 5:9. Some people just seem to have the gift of division, disagreement, discord, and disunity. And some people actually enjoy it. 1 Timothy 6, Paul talked about those who have a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, out of which arise envy, strife, abusive language, evil suspicions, and constant friction. See, there are those who get a kick out of causing problems and causing arguments, making other people mad. They thrive on it. And I'm sure that you've seen those people who create drama. They deliberately stir up trouble between people so they can just sit back and watch. It's as if they can't get away to watch their favorite soap opera. And so, well, they're going to create dramas at work and at school and at church or wherever. Did you hear what so-and-so said about you? Mm-hmm. I remember kids in school and their bloodlust, egging others on, trying to get them in the fight, get them into a fight simply for entertainment purposes. Have we grown out of that? So what are some of the different ways that we can spread strife? Well, we can spread strife by repeating gossip. Proverbs 26:20, for lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, contention quiets down. So quit spreading it around. We can spread strife by meddling in other people's business. 1 Peter 4, it talks about not being a troublesome meddler. Mind your own business. We can spread strife by being argumentative. Proverbs 20 and verse 3, keeping away from strife is an honor for a man, but any fool will quarrel. And 2 Timothy 2:24, it says that the Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome. Yes, there are important things, and you need to stand up for the truth, but quit arguing about everything. We can spread strife by stirring up anger. As Proverbs 29:33 says, for as churning cream produces butter, and as twisting the nose produces blood, so stirring up anger produces strife. So quit going around trying to make people mad. When I was a little kid, I used to really enjoy watching The Muppet Show. And in that show, there are these two hecklers up on the balcony named Statler and Waldorf. And if you've seen it, you remember them. They're these two elderly Muppet characters. And they would criticize and taunt and jeer and joke about everyone who came up on the stage and their performances. Now, that was a part of the show, and they made me laugh quite a few times. But as you know, there are people like that in real life. They feel that it's their job or their ministry to make everyone feel less about themselves. See, whenever someone says or does something, they take great pleasure in making a joke or putting them down or making some kind of, some kind of dig. But that kind of behavior, it just makes people feel bad, and it just causes disharmony. Blessed are the peacemakers. Christians are to pursue peace with each other. In Ephesians 4, Paul said, walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing forbearance to one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. It takes work. Notice how he said to be diligent, or as the NIV says, to make every effort. I think Barnabas is a good example of this. When you remember, he brought Paul to the brethren in Acts chapter 9, when many of them understandably didn't trust him. And I think Paul is a good example of this. When he was bringing the Gentile funds to the Jewish Christians during the famine, trying to build their relationship between the Jewish and the Gentile Christians. See, this is a Christian family. And families that just don't do very well. When people are bad-mouthing one another, and they're fighting, and they're bickering. And I'm sure you've seen this problem in some physical families. Maybe even your own. See, you're supposed to defend and stand up for your family members. You're supposed to assume the best, not be assuming the worst and going around accusing and condemning and stirring them up and all that kind of stuff. And Christians are to pursue peace with those who are not our brethren. Romans 12, 17 and 18, it says, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, So far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. And then in verse 21, it says, do not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. So Christians are to operate in this world in peaceable ways. We're to strive to live harmoniously with our neighbors and our coworkers and our friends and our family and our church. And yes, some people, they're not interested. Okay, they're not interested in peace. But as Paul said here in Romans 12, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. See, as Christian peacemakers, we're to do what we can to bring about peace where it doesn't exist. And I really like that story about the two brothers who lived on adjoining farms. And you've heard it before. These guys, you know, after farming side by side for years and even sharing equipment and tools and whatever else was needed, well, they had a falling out. And as it often happens, it started with just a little misunderstanding that grew into, I don't know, this major conflict. And one day, the older brother, he got a knock at the door. And it was a carpenter. And the carpenter, he said, I'm looking for work. Do you have any jobs that I can do? Yes, he said. He said, look over there. That's my younger brother's place. And last week there was a meadow between us, but he took his bulldozer to the river levee, and now there's a stream. Okay, there's this creek between us. Well, you know what? I can do better than that. You see that pile of lumber over there? Well, what I want you to do is build me an 8-foot privacy fence so I don't have to look at his place or his face again. And the carpenter replied, I think I understand. Show me the materials, and you know, I'll do a job that pleases you. Well, after showing him, the elder brother, he left for the day. That evening when he got back, his jaw just fell. Because instead of a fence, there was a bridge stretching from one side of the creek to the other. And just then, his younger brother, he started coming across that bridge with a big old smile on his face and his hand outstretched, and he said, you are quite a man to build this bridge, you know, after all that I've said and all that I've done. And the two brothers, they met in the middle of the bridge, and they shook hands, and they started talking and talking and sorting it all out. And after a while, they noticed that the carpenter, he began packing up his stuff, and the older brother said, no, wait, I've got more projects for you. And the carpenter replied, you know, I'd love to stay on, but I have many more bridges to build. And like him, we have many bridges left to build in our own relationships and in the relationships of others. And so be a peacemaker and not a peacemaker. Let's follow the example of Abraham in Genesis 13. Please let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers. And then, of course, he offered Lot any land he wanted. So in conclusion, you know, a fair and just society cannot exist without honesty. And a united and healthy community cannot exist without peace. There are 6 things which the Lord hates, yes, 7, which are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers. Many people like the idea of a God who is, well, he's just a soft, doting grandpa with one eye shut. But the true God, see, the real God is a holy God. Yes, there are some things that God hates, and yes, there are some things that we are to hate. Psalm 97:10 flat out says, to hate evil, you who love the Lord. And in 1 John chapter 1, we read, "This is the message we have heard from him and announced to you, that God is light, and in him there is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him and yet walk in the darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. But if we walk in the light, as he himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from all sin." See, Satan would just love it if you would embrace one or more of these seven things. And he is really good at talking people into stuff. And so I want to leave you this morning with the words of Peter in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith."